All right, guys. Rocky wanted to come in and say hello to everyone today. He was very excited. He was very excited to be on Will With Live, to be saying things to you. And because this is the end of the year, we have to talk about Will With Live first. The first thing is that Will With Live is actually going to be taking a short hiatus after the new year. This is the last episode of the year, like I said. Will With Live, as you guys can tell, I mean, Taylor will flip through the cameras and you guys are going to be able to see this, but it's like, the setup is not what we want it to be. The segmentation of the show is not exactly what we want it to be. There are a lot of things that we want to work on within the show to make it just absolutely the best that it can be. So we're hopefully going to get some more people helping to work on this, be able to make things smoother, more clean. Right now, it's pretty much just been me and Taylor doing this. I've never, like, done a show or anything like that before, so it's been difficult. I don't know how to work cameras. I don't know lighting. We're trying our best we can to be able to do this and make it all work and everything. So there's going to be a short break while Taylor and I figure out everything for this show to make it the best that it can be, because I don't want to put out a bad product for people. I want to have an amazing thing. So just wait on that, guys. It will be coming. Will With Live will be coming back sometime in January, but just not for a little bit. And also, I'm on vacation next week as well. Next week is Christmas week. I don't understand businesses that don't, or people who don't, like, take off, like, the whole week of Christmas. I take off the whole week of Christmas to go home and spend time with my family and my girlfriend who I'm seeing and all sorts of people who I care about. I take that time for myself. I don't understand people who don't. But we have a good episode for you guys today where I interviewed an Antifa member, former Antifa member, and he had a bunch of cool stuff to say, stuff that you guys probably don't know about Antifa. It's going to be really good. But before that, I wanted to tell you guys a story. As the Christmas episode, this is going to be a very heartfelt episode. You guys can see I got my stocking behind me. We're very festive over here at Will With Live. But I want to tell you guys a story that is special to me that I think might be helpful or useful for a lot of people, especially during this time. It's like this time in America sucks right now with the election and voter fraud and COVID and losing jobs and everything. It sucks in a lot of ways, but there's so many good things as well. When I was 17 years old, I was not too happy with a lot of the stuff I was doing in my life. My relationship with my mom wasn't too good. I was starting to not do too well in school. This was when I was still in high school. I was a senior in high school at the time when this was happening. I was sneaking out and partying a lot too, which I shouldn't have been, but I was doing it anyway and lying to my mom. And I was pretty lazy. Things like homework and stuff like that, I wouldn't really do. I would just go in and take the test the next day without really studying and things. So anyway, I wasn't too happy with myself. I didn't have that good of friends, and that was what my life was like. And so I wasn't feeling too good. And I remember I was driving my car back in Colorado. My car breaks down, and this whole thing, I'm over on, I don't know, somewhere in Denver, and my car completely breaks down and starts steaming. It overheated. It just stopped working in the middle of the road. Like, not even, like, on the side of the road. I wasn't able to pull over. It just stopped in the middle of the road. Had to get a tow truck. Tow truck came, pulled everything, pulled my car away to a mechanic. And I thought, like, my life couldn't get worse at that very moment. It, like, sucked. I was not feeling good. Oh, and the girlfriend who I had, we just broke up, too. So I was sad about that. I was a sad little breakup boy as well about that. But that happened, and so I go to this auto shop. I'm waiting to hear about what's going on with my car, what happened to it. I have no idea what's going on. I'm pissed off. I'm sad. I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Like, how am I supposed to get to school and everything else and do things that I want to do? And so I was visibly upset, and this one guy at the mechanic shop, I wish I could remember his name. I can't remember his name, but he was one of the mechanics there, and he could tell that I was pretty upset. And this guy came over and he was just like the most genuine, nice, loving guy, one of the most loving people I've ever met in my life. And he came over, he consoled me, he talked to me about a lot of my problems. And I was like, you know, just some random guy who I'd never met, just like going off about all these things happening in my life and talking to, and he was listening and giving me advice. It was just like some random mechanic guy, you know? And it's like, I can guarantee you that now, if someone were to ever find this mechanic guy, if you're watching, you're the man, but I doubt it. And if someone were to ever find this guy and ask him about this, he wouldn't even remember. He would have no idea. But something like that for me, that was like, what, seven, 7 years ago for me, something like that, still stuck with me so much that it was something that honestly was like a life-changing experience for me. After I talked to this guy and he like told me things, it made me want to change a lot about my life, actually, in a lot of ways. And I tell this story because this is the holidays. This is a time when a lot of people are struggling. This is a time when things really suck. And I think about this story because of like something that he wouldn't even remember that affected me so much. When you're going around in life and you have people, you know, in your at your office or at your school or your family or some random person who you meet on the street, you do one small nice thing for them or something that truly means a lot, you can like change someone's entire life, entire perspective in just a minuscule moment. So that was something that really changed me, and I as a Christmas lesson for everyone, I'm trying to do something nice, okay? I know I'm always usually pretty cynical about all the news and things that come up, but I wanted to do something nice and explain it to you guys because it truly was a life-changing thing for me that some random person would just be so completely nice and heartwarming to me. So if you guys are finding anyone out there, random people, someone you know, do something nice for someone, okay? I know that sounds like easy that you can just do something nice for someone, but you know, you have no idea how much it really means to someone until you just go and do it. So that's about all I got for that story. Taylor, did you enjoy that story? I didn't tell Taylor the story before we started today. I was saying that I was like, okay, I have a story, but I'm not going to tell Taylor. What have you done nice for someone this year?
This year? Well, I've done a lot for you.
You have done a lot for
me. Just, you know, making all of your content so much better than it was BT
and
before
all those,
Taylor.
Those late night massages.
Yeah. Everything. All those nice things. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I think I'm getting lots of good things in my stocking and no coal just based on how much I've elevated your content. And
that's very modest of you, Taylor. Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Do you have any stories like that? Were you listening?
Honestly, I was kind of not listening because nice. I'm like people are reading people's comments and getting all of the promotions
okay.
posted and everything.
That's okay.
But it sounded very, the parts I caught sounded very heartwarming.
It was like someone doing something nice for you. Out of the blue, someone you never met that they probably wouldn't remember, but you remember that like was made a huge impact on your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that kind of stuff stands out these days for sure because there's so little just basic kindness and empathy in the world. Like, you know, I was at Trader Joe's the other day checking out and my associate wished me a Merry Christmas and I was like shocked. It was this like, you know, just, I don't know, older tattooed black man and he had like a really gruff, grovelly voice. And he just wished me Merry Christmas, which in LA, I don't know, that's normal in other parts of the country. Like I'm kind of from Oklahoma, that you just expect that. But in LA, you don't hear that very much.
No.
And it was just like a heartwarming thing, the simplest thing. But it's crazy how even little things like that just kind of seem to escape us nowadays.
When I was at Trader Joe's like a couple months ago, I got recognized in Trader Joe's. The guy who was like, which is strange because the guy who worked there, he was actually a Will Witt Live listener. And he came and he recognized me. He was like, wow, you're really buying pumpkin flavored beer. I thought you were like an alpha male. And I was like, listen, it's not about the type of beer you drink. Okay. I'm still very manly, but he recognized me. And
I don't think that's unmanly.
Pumpkin beer.
Yeah.
It's unmanly.
A craft beer is
craft,
you know,
beer is disgusting. Craft, not, no one like actually likes craft beer.
I love craft beer.
No, you don't.
It's not like you're out there getting like
you're telling me
Angry Orchard cider or, you know, some sort of.
I would rather have an Angry Orchard cider than
I bet you
stupid
would.
Craft beer. No one actually likes
getting
craft
like Smirnoff the fizzy ones or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, getting like iced.
Gosh. Yeah.
No one would like. No one actually likes craft beer. People say it's just the same as like sushi. Like people say that they like sushi or craft beer that tastes like garbage, but in reality, they only do it because they think it makes them look cool.
I guess so. This is kind of getting off the rails here. We're going down a rabbit hole, but
it's true.
It is true.
It is true.
But I love how like your favorite thing was it like something heartwarming for you is that someone recognized you in a public. Yeah.
That wasn't even what I was saying. That wasn't even what it was about. It was about, I was talking about a mechanic guy.
Yeah.
And then I was just thinking about Trader Joe's and the guy recognized me because I went to the farmer's market. Right,
someone recognized you when we were out in Santa Monica too.
Oh, people recognize me all the time. It's cool. For all you people,
she's a podcast listener. We were just like out on the street and she,
Somebody.
We were like, we had just gone live like 2 seconds earlier. She was like, I was watching you guys.
I know. She like lived in the house next door. She came outside and was like, I just watched you.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah, I live right here. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was very cool. All right, we're kind of getting off track here. I'm going to probably switch this over to the interview, I think, to the Antifa interview. This is about basically the truth about Antifa. Gabriel Nadal is who I interviewed. He's got a new book coming out. It's linked in the caption of this Will Witt Live episode, so you can check it out. It's really cool. He's a really good guy for one day, or for once being an Antifa member, now coming over to the conservative side. So I hope you guys enjoy this. Check it out, and we'll be back after the interview. Gabriel Nadalis, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on.
So today is just pretty casual chat. Sure. You are a former Antifa member.
Sure, that's casual, I guess.
Yeah, that is pretty casual. I mean, most Antifa members that I meet don't like me very much, so to have you here on my show is pretty cool, actually. How did you become an Antifa member?
You know, it really takes me back. I mean, in 2009, I remember being really interested in politics and left-wing politics and stuff. But I remember doing a lot of left-wing things, or liberal things even. I attended pro-immigration marches, anti-war marches. But then it was in 2011, the first time that I put on the black mask. And it's because in Claremont, California, there was going to be a neo-Nazi rally. And, you know, I had already heard a little bit about Antifa at that point. I decided that I wanted to attend, and I dressed all in black. Well, that's basically the first time that I kind of started doing things with the radical left. I met people there who were part of the anti-racist action, which is the before modern American Antifa was called Antifa, they called themselves the anti-racist action. And then people like him, they invited me to things all throughout Southern California. I attended the anarchist book fairs in Los Angeles and Orange County. And I did things with...
Anarchist Book Fair?
Yeah, the Anarchist Book Fairs. In 2011, I remember in Los Angeles, and I actually can't remember exactly where it was, but it was in downtown LA. And, you know, they have a bunch of different left-wing organizations and publishers, like the PM Press, like AK Press, which they specifically publish only communist, socialist, and anarchist theories, as well as some collectives or affinity groups from the area. And a collective or affinity group is basically a small group of people that kind of work and do activism within together. And actually, that brings me to another point. That's when people talk about Antifa, they don't even understand really what they're talking about, because Antifa is more like a banner or like a big umbrella that kind of covers all of these smaller collectives or affinity groups. Most people don't necessarily join a group that's named Antifa. Instead, they'll join groups that are called like the Redneck Revolt, the what do they call it? The Youth Liberation Front right now is really big. In San Francisco, you have the 161 crew. In Berkeley, you have BAM, By Any Means Necessary, and all these groups. And it's interesting because there's the website called Unicorn Right. It's a pro
Unicorn Right?
Unicorn Right. It's a pro-Antifa website, and they actually give you instructions of how to start an Antifa group. And they say it's better for you not to use the name of Antifa. They give you a specific example. If a protest erupts in Las Cruces, the example they give, if the media will pick up Las Cruces Antifa doing something big, but they will not, they will ignore the group that's called Las Cruces United Against Racism. The same thing, but they just don't use the Antifa name. And that's basically what Antifa is. It's a collection of different affinity groups and different collectives all throughout America that typically work together to fight against democracy and against basic American values.
So do you think that young people or whoever is joining one of these groups that isn't Antifa, you said like 161 in Berkeley and some of these,
yeah,
these other ones, like, do you think that when they join those groups, they know that it's not called Antifa, but I'm actually joining Antifa? Do they think that it's Antifa, even if it's by a different name? Or do they kind of get sucked into it and then eventually radicalized to be an Antifa member?
Well, I don't think that people go into it thinking, I'm going to join the Antifa group. I'm sure there's some examples, especially with the groups that do use the Antifa name, like Rose City Antifa, Philly Antifa, Sacramento Antifa. But for the most part, they're just doing things with their friends, or they go into a radical bookstore or a record shop, and they start getting linked up with a bunch of different radical leftists or radical activists. And then they start to realize, oh, this is actually what Antifa is. It's not necessarily this big organization. It's more of a collection of smaller different groups. A lot of them actually do work with one another, which is this big lie that Antifa is not organized. It very much is. In fact, 9 Antifa chapters in 2013 formed something that is known as the Torch Anti-Fascist Network. They have an annual conference in which they send delegates to. It's a two-day conference. And the first day, it's closed to the public, only members of those 10 chapters. And then the second day, it's open to some of the other Antifa groups that are not necessarily part of the closely knit chapters, but are kind of part of the whole movement as a whole. I mean, that's not an idea. That's an actual movement organization. And of course, there has to be some sort of funding somewhere.
Where does that funding come from? I mean, what did you see?
So as far as me, and again, it varies very much from group to group. My group, we were all self-funded. There's this big lie out there that George Soros is funding everything. Don't get me wrong. George Soros funds a lot of left-wing causes. I mean, he sponsored the DA in San Francisco as well as DAs all throughout the United States. But that's separate from Antifa. While many Antifa activists are, they'll like some of the things that George Soros does, there's, at least from my experience, there's no direct connection. That being said, I know that there has to be some funding, and just by looking at some of the public record. There's this professor, Mark Bray, he wrote a book, an Antifa book, and he said that he was going to donate half of the book's proceeds to an unnamed group to give Antifa resources. I mean, and if this group is getting money from this book, then it must be getting money from other sources as well. But again, that's something that they keep very quiet. They don't want people to know that they're much more organized than they truly are.
I feel like that's a huge misstep for conservatives, because I mean, I go on Twitter all the time and you'll see talking about either, like what you said, George Soros is funding Antifa, or they're just a bunch of leftists living in their basement, you know. But in reality, it sounds like what you're saying is like they're actually way more organized and they have a plan. What would you say is like the final plan of an Antifa?
You know, Antifa itself kind of varies because it doesn't have a coherent ideology. It's more of a collective or collection of different groups. To really look at what Antifa really stands for, well, we have to look at what each individual group wants. The Red Guards of Austin, which is an Antifa group in Austin, Texas, well, they're much more communist and much red, and they're very open about believing in Maoist ideologies. And Portland, it's more of an anarchist ideology, so it kind of varies. But at the end of the day, we know that they come together for a common goal, and that common goal is to destroy the basic principles of America. That means that they are against capitalism, they're against just freedom of speech, and of course they're against institutionalized religion. They don't believe in a higher power. And in fact, a lot of anarchists have this saying, there's no authority but yourself, no gods, no masters, which is kind of the mentality of Antifa, if you will.
It's crazy. Like, living in America, you have so many good things. Like, being an American is, like, awesome, you know, versus living in many other places around the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Mexican. I'm very well aware that America is freaking great.
Yeah, exactly, right?
But you know, oftentimes they will magnify those things those people who fall through the cracks, and then they blame it's capitalism, as opposed to looking inward or looking at specific examples and saying, well, is it really capitalism? Or unfortunately, did some people make really bad mistakes that led them to poverty? And I mean, of course, there's poverty out there. Poverty is the initial state of human nature. Unfortunately, they will always blame capitalism for causing poverty, as opposed to the reality, which capitalism lifts people out of poverty.
Yeah. What would you say, like, talking to these Antifa people? Because I've actually recently, I've been talking a lot more kind of more populist stuff, kind of anti-crony businesses and crony politicians, you know. And I feel like that's something that I would hope that a lot of leftists could see and also want to get behind. What do you think that Antifa and conservatives could really come together on? Is there anything?
I mean, it's really
look good
difficult.
In black. So that works.
It's
that.
Really difficult. You know, one thing that I did on election day in November, was it November 3rd?
3rd, yeah.
I live in D.C. and I decided to go check out what Antifa was doing. So I dressed up in the black block and I just showed up just to see what they were saying amongst each other. And I actually have some pictures of me behind this banner, and the banner said, it's time to destroy the American plantation. There's almost no there's almost no overlap between conservative values and Antifa values, because Antifa stands to destroy basic American values. But it would be remiss, it would be wrong to say that Antifa is only against conservatives.
Right.
Antifa is against Democrats, against liberals, progressives. In fact, I've read some stuff in some of this leftist workshops, or leftist bookstores rather, where they call AOC too capitalist for them. That's how far left they are.
Yeah, that if they think AOC is too far capitalist for them. About any, I mean, that does make sense, because AOC is a hypocrite about so many of the things she says. You know, she says she's a leftist and she's all about climate change and stuff, and then has the big cars and private jets, just like all these people. What would you say then if you don't think that there's much common ground? I mean, I guess, first of all, how did you get out of it?
Sure.
So secondly, how do you think that we can get other people out of that?
Sure. You know, I was in Antifa for about a year and a half kind of thing. But about towards the end of that, I started learning about Milton Friedman has this great series that I still recommend to these people. It's called Free to Choose.
Love that. Yeah, it's so good.
And I got into them, and I also heard a lot of stuff by Thomas Sowell, and it's fantastic.
Wait, sorry, just to interrupt. Why did you start watching those if you were Antifa?
Oh, so it's really funny. My economics teacher in my senior high school, he kind of introduced me to some of the free market theory kind of like and stuff. So I started doing research on my own just because I was curious, you know? And I was curious. I didn't like them, but I found them interesting enough that I wanted to talk to my friends about this idea. Well, my friends were also members of the anarchist movement, the anarchist culture. And I always say, for being an anarchist, that was the very first time that I was called a capitalist pig, just for asking questions.
Yeah.
Surely enough, as soon as I started having these ideas, or kind of just even not even ideas, I just had questions about what we were doing, what we believed. Well, they started treating me as their enemy. That made me want to reach out to the other side to really see what was going on, because I read some of the ideas. I'm like, well, this doesn't sound terrible. Like, so I started reaching out to conservatives, and you know, I eventually started a conservative club at a college. This is several months. I'm kind of jumping ahead in time.
Yeah, no, okay.
And the reason I started a conservative club is because I wanted to really understand what conservatives and libertarians were thinking, and you know, hear from them as opposed to what everybody kept saying. And you know, a lot of people think that it's really weird that myself, a left-wing person, would start a conservative club, but it's super common that whenever you attack somebody and tell them, don't look at that, all of a sudden, well, I want to go check it out.
Yeah, it's plain hard to get.
Yeah. And so I started this group, and I made a lot of different friends, and I saw this stark contrast between Antifa and, or like the so-called anarchists and my new friends, that my new friends were open to just discussion. I asked questions and they would respond, and if they don't know the answer, well, they would introduce me to other theories who may have the answer. You know, I got really into the Mises Institute, which is an anarcho-capitalist thing, which is, that's a different conversation.
Yeah. So how do we get more people to get out of it? I mean, if it's not, if some of these people's minds can't be changed as well, like, how do we defeat Antifa too?
I mean, there's a couple of different ways. First of all, Antifa needs to be tackled head on with the federal government. It is a domestic terrorist organization, and we have to treat it as such so we can kind of fight against the violence that we keep seeing time and time again.
But I guess that does make it harder when each one's an individual group.
That is hard. Because
you can't classify so many.
Yeah, that does make it difficult, but you know, it's not like every single group is as dangerous as others. Mm-hmm. So we can actually put them, categorize them, and put them in different levels, threat levels. But that's a different thing. That's on the criminal side.
Right.
But that doesn't actually defeat Antifa, the idea behind the movements. Yeah. So we actually have to start reaching out to some of the, first of all, we have to call out the left-wing media, the mainstream left-wing media, because they continually make it seem like Antifa is actually like a good thing. I mean, I always talk about this guy, his name is Kamel Bell, CNN reporter, who brought on an Antifa member to talk about what it was. And then she pulled out brass knuckles and knives, and they were both laughing as if like violence was some big joke. And then he also interviewed members of the Redneck Revolt, an Antifa chapter. And a few months later, one of those same people he interviewed was the same person who bombed an ICE facility in Washington. And he called them the good guys just a few months before that. So we have to call out the mainstream supporters who think that Antifa isn't that bad or who even admire Antifa in some respects. But also, we really have to go into college campuses and stomp out that the Antifa mentality, because I call a lot of professors and left-wing administrators Antifa light. While they don't necessarily use the same violence, they do use the same intimidation. They use their positions of power to be able to intimidate conservative thought so they never have a voice. And what happens is that since conservatives aren't allowed to speak freely on college campuses, well, leftism keeps going unchecked. And people think that the thing to do is to be a liberal, to be a leftist, because there's no other alternative present on college campuses.
That's what's so crazy, though, because they say that that the conservatives are stifling the leftist voices on campus or whatever, and then it's really, in reality, I mean, every single situation, big tech, education system, mainstream media, it is the leftist voices that are snuffing out the conservatives. It's like they play the victims so much that it totally twists everything the exact opposite of what it should be. Do you find that, at least for yourself and maybe some of the other Antifa people you talk to, was there any sort of turning point moment that made them want to join a group like that? Was there anything that they were raised with or something that was a kind of defining thread line between all of them?
You know, it really varies. I'm actually really good friends with somebody who was in Antifa about 15 years ago, so about 10 years before I was. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting because he wrote a book. I'm not going to reveal his name because he's going to come out with it in a few months and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the crazy thing is that he was around for about 5 years, and he was an organizer. So when he comes out, I actually have to do a little bit of explaining. As far as Antifa, there's like three levels of organizing. There's the national thought leaders. You have like Mark Bray or some other left-wing politicians. Then you have the regional people who are active throughout certain parts of the country. And they basically know other regional leaders throughout the country. And they're basically things who are getting started, who try to get things started. And then there's people like me who were at the lower end who did things very locally, but we didn't really know some of the higher ends. This guy is somewhere closer to like the national leader. Mm-hmm. He knows people who are still active today, and they're going to be really pissed when he comes out. But interestingly, the reason that he decided to join the anarchist movement, we've had conversations about this, is because he just saw the violence that was going on in Seattle in 1999, and he was like, well, why are they fighting? I want to be part of that. And as he tells me, that a lot of times you get drawn into this as a liberal, because he was a liberal at the time, you see that you're not making any progress with some protests, but then you see the anarchists come up and they start beating people up and like breaking windows, and then you're like, wow, like I should be more active like them. That's how he got started. As far as me, it's a very similar story. I mean, I was a liberal activist for about a year and a half. And then I started seeing like Antifa and these things. And I decided, you know what, maybe I should be kind of part of this movement. And I mean, yeah, I met them. And then that I started doing all that stuff as well.
That's wild, man. Mm-hmm. How many members of Antifa do you think there are across the country?
I get that question a lot. And it's difficult to pin down because, I mean, because some affinity groups that are very active are only a couple of people. The Red Guards of Austin, for example, they'll talk about how when they first started, and I read some of their things online, they said that they only had about a dozen people when they first started. And then a few years later, they had like about 5,000, I think, something like that. And just in Austin or whatever. And to be fair, Austin is one of the biggest circles or hubs for anarchist activity. But then it's kind of hard to pin down, because how many of them are actual activists, or how many people are young kids or just regular activists who saw Antifa and they put on the black mask just thinking, not really knowing what they were getting into, you know?
Yeah, I just want to throw a bottle through a window or something.
You know, and they're not really part of the movement, but they just kind of showed up for that one day or just a couple of protests. It's hard to pin down, but it's got to be somewhere in the tens of thousands, probably. I wouldn't get closer to like the 100,000. I don't think anywhere close to that. But even a small group of like a dozen people are enough to create real damage in some instances.
Well, especially when the police don't do anything against them. The mainstream media doesn't say they're bad. They are unchecked. Are there anything like that you would say, you know, have you ever been in a fraternity?
No.
No. Like in a fraternity, when you go through the initiation and stuff, you're not supposed to say what happened later. Is there any sort of initiation to get into Antifa or any sort of like things that people should know out there about what they do kind of undercover?
There's no initiation per se, but let me tell you, the more you do, the more you will be respected and the more you will be invited or even allowed to go into some of the inner circles with some other groups. Going back to my friend, I remember that this might give it a little bit too much, but in the year 2000, he got arrested and it became a huge, huge deal. This is before he was kind of an anarchist, but he wasn't really in the inner circles, if you will. He got arrested in the year 2000, and there's this civil rights activist attorney who got them out after seven days in L.A. County Jail or whatever, and there was about 22 of them. Well, that arrest of him rolling with those radical activists was the reason that he was able to be invited to some of the inner circles in D.C. when they disrupted the Washington – the Bush inauguration. And, I mean – the more you do, the more respect you have within the movement and the more you become more of a regional organizer as opposed to just like a lower foot soldier, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. It's almost not necessarily like a gang initiation, but it's like the more like you earn your stripes kind of.
Yeah.
And then you go up in the ranks.
Yeah.
What would you want people to know about Antifa that you think is either a misconception that people have or something that you think people, if they're watching, need to know?
Well, number one, Antifa is not just an idea. I mean, if you want to say that it's an idea, it's the same way that white supremacy is just an idea. But there's really hateful groups out there that use either white supremacy or Antifa to harm innocent people. So that's where it really becomes dangerous. But the second thing is that Antifa isn't really fighting against fascism. Antifa is really trying to destroy basic American values like freedom of speech and, you know, the free market economy.
Do you ever get death threats now or anything horrible from former Antifa members?
From former Antifa members?
Or from Antifa members now because you were a former Antifa member?
You know, I get a bunch of random people like calling me out, some racist names too also, on like Facebook and Twitter, and like Instagram. But I've been lucky to not get much of that. Just some nasty people.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've looked my name up on Google to see if anyone's saying, and some people are like really trash talk me, you know,
in
some of those circles and stuff.
I've
been very thankful that it hasn't escalated to that point, and hopefully it doesn't. But I mean, so long as you oppose hateful groups, those hateful groups will eventually start going after you.
Yeah. But the Antifa people were the trendsetters for the masks, which is kind of a big deal. You know, they were on the black mask before everyone else was. So at least they have some fashion sense, or at least we're ahead of the curve on the virus.
You know, it's weird going into a bank and having a mask
on. Yeah, exactly.
It's just a weird, different thing. But
I know. Last question. How many of the Antifa members would you say on average were white? Would you say it was a majority?
I get that question sometimes, and I mean, I'm from Southern California. Like, all of my friends were like Hispanic or and stuff. Yeah. Some Native Americans, one who happened to be an African American guy. I probably would not be the study group for that, if you will, because I'm in SoCal.
Yeah.
Like, everybody looks like me.
Yeah.
You know, most people look like me.
I am pretty tan, so that works out. Yeah. Well, cool, man. I appreciate you coming on and talking about Antifa. It's good to get that out there, man. It's just so much like misconceptions out there, and the left praises Antifa when in reality they're this violent group with tons of different sects across the country who really are looking to destroy America. Did you hear people did you hear people like when you were there in Antifa saying like specifically they wanted to destroy America? Was that like a specific thing that was said?
Like, I mean, at the anarchist book fairs you had banners that were like down with capitalism, down with America, you know. Different chants, I can't remember. No justice, no peace. Like, police or America, KKK, whatever. You know, like, like, there's so many examples that I can think of. Like, I can't even.
Evil people. Well, hopefully they find God. That's what we can all hope for. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And we're back. We're back, everyone. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview, me with a former Antifa member. I thought it was super interesting. I mean, it's crazy to think that, like, the left says Antifa isn't an organization and they're so disorganized. In reality, I mean, this guy comes on and tells you about all the different sects that there are, talks about all the different places that they are, the amount of members, how only a few people can do a huge amount of damage in one place. It's scary that that's what's going on. I was reading the comments while I was going on live. Some guy was commenting about my accessories. He said, "You have too many accessories on, man. You have a hat, you have a necklace, you have glasses. Do you understand that I need these glasses to see, man?" Whoever made that comment, I don't wear these glasses because I want to wear glasses. I wear these glasses because I have to see. And then I wear this necklace because of my girlfriend. It has a K on it for her name. I'm a great boyfriend, if you guys didn't know. I'm a very good, very good boyfriend. No big deal. I think that's about all we got for the show today, guys. I want to thank all of you guys for an amazing year. We started this podcast about 6 months ago, right, Taylor? Something like that?
Must be, yeah.
Must be, yeah. About 6 months ago. And all of you guys, thank you for all the support and everything and sticking in with us. We got a lot of bigger things planned for next year when we can actually get things really running smoothly in different segments and more guests that are better and all sorts of good stuff. So we're really excited. Thank you, Taylor, for an amazing year and all the help. I really appreciate you, despite screwing things up so many times.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. I know you do. I'm the one who got you this job. So.
Oh, definitely. Everything I've accomplished, I owe to you.
I know. Anyways, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Remember, share this video with your friends. Comment your thoughts down below. Follow me and PragerU on social media. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can give this 5 stars. Leave it a nice comment. We really appreciate it. And we will be back in 2021 with more Will Wit Live. Thank you guys so much for everything. We'll see you guys later. Peace.